Blog Talk Radio.
Well, you may throw your rock, hide your hand, working in the dark against your fellow man. But as sure as God made black and white, what's done in the dark will be brought to the light. You can run on for a long time, run on for a long time, run on for a long time. Sooner or later, gotta cut you down. Sooner or later, gotta cut you down. Go tell that long-tongued liar, go and tell that midnight rider, tell the rambler, the gambler, the backbiter, tell him that God's gonna cut you down, tell him that God's gonna cut you down, tell him that God's gonna cut you down.
Well, good evening. This is Terry Dodd. You have found Walls in Our Minds. I'm on with my guest host tonight, Red Beckman. And Red, are you with us?
Red's not here yet, Terry.
Red's not here yet. Well, thank you.
Not yet.
Hi, Mama Cooks.
Hi, how are you?
Well, I'm glad you're with me.
Okay, Red's here now.
Red is here.
Yes, yes.
I'm present and accounted for.
Hello, Red.
Yeah,
Mama Cooks is going to give us more. Mama Cooks is going to give us one of her awesome prayers tonight to open the show.
Sounds right. Sounds good to me.
All right. Father, we just come to you tonight once again to explore the walls in our minds. Father, we have been told so many lies by people who have agendas and who want us to be held in the dark and to believe things that aren't true. But you are the truth. You are the way, the truth, and the life. And we know that truth can be found in your word and that your Holy Spirit will lead us and guide us into all truth and will illuminate your word for us. And we just pray that you will clear our minds, that you will help us to be able to discern the truth, to know the truth, and that the truth will set us free. Father, we bow our knee and we proclaim that you are the Lord of Lords and that you are above all other gods. We proclaim that we have no king but Jesus and that he is the ruler, the sovereign of our lives, and that he and you in our creation have bestowed sovereignty on us. We are responsible to you. We are your subjects. And we have pledged ourselves to be holy and godly and to follow the example that you put before us of justice, of mercy, of love, of kindness, of long-suffering and self-control. Father, we commit ourselves to these high standards. We bow our knees to you as our sovereign, and we desire in everything that we do to bring honor and glory to you. We just dedicate this show to you tonight. Help us to be speaking the truth in love. And we just worship you and honor you. In Jesus' name, amen.
Amen. And thank you so much, Mama Cooks. Before you go anywhere, we would love for you to tell us about your new show that you, I'm not sure which week you're in right now, but about the Firm Foundation on Tuesday afternoons. Would you give us a little update and let the listeners know what's going on Tuesdays?
Thank you very much. On Tuesday evenings at this time, Tallulah and I do a show that we are kind of crawling through Genesis, and we are looking at the firm foundation that's been laid for our lives and for our faith in God's Word. And we're just learning who God is through a book called Lord, I Want to Know You, and we're learning the different names that God has and that show different aspects of his character. We've studied El Shaddai, the all-sufficient God, and we are working now on Adonai, who is our Lord and our Master. And so we're just learning more about our relationship to God as we learn more about his names and his word. So it's on Tuesday nights at 9 o'clock Eastern Daylight Time, And it's on this same station, Dr. Kate's Revolution Radio. And we would be glad to have everyone come and listen because and call in and talk, because the more people talking about what they're seeing in the scripture, the better it is, because we all have different gifts and we see different facets of the word. But it's very good, and we have good music too. So we're like in week 9, I think. It's our, you know, the beginning of our third month, which is crazy to me, but I'm really enjoying it, and I hope that people are just deepening their relationship with the Lord through it. So thank you.
Well, Mama Cooks, thank you for that update. Before you go, you might want to, I mean, of course you're listening anyway, but I wanted to give an update on Dr. Kate, what's going on with her. I know that some of her listeners are probably wondering, you know, where was she last night? You did a replay last night, correct, of another show?
Right. Yep, I did.
Well, what happened, so everybody will know, and I don't, did you tell anyone last night at the beginning of the show, did you say anything about what's going on with her? Or am I?
I just said that she was, she was with her mom who's in the hospital, and that I asked everyone to be praying for Dr. Kate's mom and for Dr. Kate. I didn't give any further details, but if you want to fill them in more. But I did start it with just a little bit of, you know, what's going on. So.
Well, good.
So you,
well, anyway,
you said that,
Kate's mom,
go ahead.
Dr. Kate's mom is 95 years old, and they thought she was septic. And she went back into the hospital, and I guess they misdiagnosed her. And Kate's been down there, obviously, for a few days now. And she's getting with her siblings, and they're, of course, having a family meeting. And they're getting her mom. They got her today into an assisted living situation. She was back on her walker, and she's very cognitive. She's very alert, very aware of what's going on. And it's really great to still have your wits and your mind about you when you're 95 years old. And so Kate's enjoying the fact that her mom, you know, is very competent and getting her situated, and just really pleased that she's back on her feet, because they were afraid that she would not be able to get back on her walker after this go into the hospital. And so Kate's really upbeat right now. She should be back in the saddle, back at home and working come this weekend. And certainly we'll look forward to getting back to a live broadcast next Wednesday. And to also add to that about next Wednesday, next Wednesday, American Politics 101, which has been at WAFS TV on Wednesday afternoons at 7 o'clock Eastern, will now be at Revolution Radio on our channel. And Dan Gonzalez and Richard Severson will be broadcasting from Blog Talk Radio, Revolution Radio, at that time next Wednesday. So it's going to be a double hit next Wednesday, and that's Dan Gonzalez and then followed up by Dr. Tate. Should be an exciting next Wednesday night here at Revolution Radio. So I just want to make sure to get that blurb in. Thanks again, Mama Cooks.
Okay, thank you. Have a good show.
Thank you. Well, Red, you finally got your garden in.
Most of it. It's been such a struggle. It isn't, I can't ever remember having to wait until after summer is here to start planting our garden. That you know, it's, and we just have to hope and pray for a late frost, because it's just been, it's been so mucky. It's just been water, and more water. And I take my fence down and every year, and then I rototill it with my tractor and such. And so when I finished putting most of the seed in today, I had to put the posts in and the get the fence started, because we've got a deer problem now. And so I use the tractor and I push those steel posts in the ground, and my goodness, it was just there was no resistance. I could have pushed those posts in the ground for, 8-foot posts, and I could have pushed them in the ground by hand almost if I'd have been just my weight alone, because it was just so soft. I've never seen that before. There's just so much moisture in the ground. It's just too much. But we got it done.
Well, I'm glad to hear you got that much of it done, because I got a feeling this fall we're going to be needing those gardens.
I think so.
I hope I'm wrong, but I got a feeling that hyperinflation is going to kick in, and a lot of people are going to be hurting. And even those of us that may be able to afford to buy the food, we're going to need to be in a position to help those that are not so fortunate, because I believe the prices are going to go right out of the sky this fall. I hope I'm wrong. I pray I'm wrong.
It could be the opposite too. We could have deflation.
Well, it could happen that way before the hyperinflation hits.
Yeah, yeah. But if you saw the figures yesterday on how the new housing is down, and of course you being in the real estate business, you're more aware of that than I. You know, it's this time of the year it should be up, and it's not up, it's down. And so by quite a large percentage. It's spooky for people that are in the real estate business, especially the subdividers and those who are building subdivisions. It's got to be pretty tough. Yeah.
Well, it's been tough enough that a lot of people are not building subdivisions. At least here in Denver, in the Denver area, housing starts on estate size lots and higher end homes had just about come to a screeching halt.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. In Montana, there's so many of those high-end homes are up for sale that were built in the last 10 or 15 years, and they're not selling.
Red, are you hearing that advertisement?
No.
Good. Apparently, everyone who's probably in chat probably just heard an advertisement coming off of the page at Blog Talk Radio, and I'll have to have a little visit with them about that. I know that some of the, especially the patriotic shows, the freedom shows, have been getting harassment by Google, putting their ads that interrupt the shows, and actually there's been even callers that have called in on some of the shows that don't have a way to screen their calls, and had the ads interrupting their shows.
That's not
very
good.
Interesting. It's not.
I didn't hear the commercial.
Well, that's because you're not on the chat room looking at the computer, probably.
Yeah.
Well, Red, you know, I told you a little bit about Schaefer Cox, our friend up in Alaska. You got to meet Schaefer at St. Charles, didn't you?
Yes. Go ahead.
He's a 26-year-old man, and one of the most mature 26-year-olds I've ever met in my life, and he's certainly wise way beyond his years. And as a result of that, you know, they made him a leader in the Alaska well-regulated state militia. And they've got like 10,000 members in that militia up there. You know, it's a properly organized militia.
Mm-hmm.
And he's got like 3,500 men that are under his direct command. And when he got back from Continental Congress, and of course he's a very outspoken young man, very courageous, but he tells the truth, and he speaks it the way he knows it. And as a result of that, they started really making him a political target. They trumped up charges against him for domestic abuse and carrying a loaded weapon in his trunk or car or whatever. They've done a lot of things that they've tried to trump up these charges on him. And then when they couldn't nail him on any of that, they went and got a warrant through Child Protective Services and literally tried to kidnap his son. And through some wise advice, he decided that he was going to, put himself and his family into safe house situations so that they really didn't know exactly where he would be at any given time. And so the Child Protective Services people went to the state troopers, the Alaska state troopers, highway patrol people, and demanded that they assist them in finding Schaefer Cox. Well, the state troopers politely told CPS that they had no intention of participating in that and asked them if they knew who Schaefer Cox was. Of course they knew who he was. But they told them that he was the leader of the Alaska militia and that they had no desire to start a war and refused to assist in serving that warrant. Well, when Schaefer got word of this from contacts that he had through the Alaskan state troopers, he had his attorney go back and petition the court and got the judge and the district attorney to drop all charges that had ever been filed against him because he was being harassed as a political prisoner. But the real, to me, the crux behind this story, Red, is just exactly what you and I have been saying on this show now for, goodness, it's been a year, Red.
Just about.
We've been doing the show together. We started out over at Patriot's Heart Network and then moved over to Revolution Radio with Walls in Our Minds, but you and I have been doing these shows together for real close to a year.
Right.
And we've been talking about the well-regulated state militias from time to time and trying to get people to understand what they are all about and why they were stated as in the Second Amendment in the Bill of Rights as being a necessary for the security of a free state. And this is a perfect example of that, Red, where if he had not had the support of that well-regulated state militia, good patriotic citizens in that state supporting him and offering him asylum and representing a threat against the police state, he would now be wishing that he had his son at home and watching his wife probably fall apart.
Yeah.
And it's no different than what you said about the IRS and they're committing murder by suicide.
Yes. Well, I'll tell you, they've met their match with Schaefer Cox, homeschooled and taught the Constitution and Bill of Rights and. And I'm sure that he is probably very, very well read. That he has probably digested some of the best, the best information available out there as to what is going on with our federal government and how that the federal government it has become absolutely, totally lawless. It's a criminal government, period. And, the sad part about it is that it's such a small percentage of us that realize that and understand what it means. I have a friend in Montana. He's computer literate. And I depend on him a great deal. And so I, you know, I have him look up stuff for me, and he likes to do that. And he called today, and he called. He got some phone numbers for Tea Party organizations in New Hampshire because he wanted to kind of catch up on what's happening with that resolution that the state legislature in New Hampshire had considered. And he told me that he had contacted a lady who is a retired public school teacher, and she is now a leader of working with tea parties in the state of New Hampshire. And so he was able to catch up on what is going on there. And he said that this school teacher, when she started getting informed, she didn't like what was happening in the public schools, and so she started researching, and she was just grasping for anything in the way of information that she could get her hands on, and she said that everything, the farther she went, you see, the more that became available to her. And she said that everything that she, every rabbit trail, you might say, that she followed, all led to the UN. All of this tampering with our education system in this country and depriving the students of the truth, and depriving them of our American heritage. Well, Schaefer Cox, you see, he didn't get in that trap because he was homeschooled. And that's why he is so effective, because he isn't under the effect of all the, you know, the misinformation, the miseducation, all the propaganda that our children that are stuck in the government schools. We've got to become aware of what they're teaching in our schools. And we've got to, we've got to get rid of public education. It's got to go. There's no way we can survive as a nation and let the NEA, the National Education Association, which is a union, they are fed their information and such right out of the UN. And so we just cannot let them continue to influence and control our education system.
Well, I've talked in the past about who I believe to be my great uncle, Norman Dodd, who did he was a part of the Reese Commission. And he did an interview, I believe it was in 1982, he did this interview with G. Edward Griffin. And what he reported, what he determined, and the Reese Commission was a congressional investigation, and he was a key member in that Reese Commission, and he found, they were investigating the tax-exempt foundations. And what he discovered was a conspiracy amongst the tax-exempt foundations, which are, you know, they were put together by people that are a part of the problem today, the Rockefellers and Fords, et cetera, those foundations, they were conspiring to take over our education system.
Mm-hmm.
Red, you talked about your friend looking up things for you. Well, this week I've done a little research, and I was looking at the definition of federal. And I think it's worth us looking at that, because apparently there was a great debate at the time of the original Constitutional Convention between whether this should be a federal government or a national government. And we've talked a lot about, you know, how they try to redefine terms and redefine words, you know, make things mean what they want it to mean instead of what it really means.
change definition.
And by doing so, they try to change the definition of what the meaning of the Constitution is.
Yes.
Well, my research led me to this. The term federal is defined as consisting in a compact between parties, particularly and chiefly between states or nations founded on alliance by contract or mutual agreement as a federal government, such as that of the United States being a compact between the states. And back in 1973, if you were to have looked up the definition of federal, you would have found the archaic definition, which says of or relating to a compact or treaty. But today, if you look in the dictionary today, you'll find things like this: formed by compact between political units that surrender their individual sovereignty to a central authority, but retain limited residuary powers of government. Or you might find this: of or consisting of a form of government in which power is distributed between a central authority and a number of constituent territorial units. You see how they changed that definition?
Yeah. Well, did you find where the founders they rejected the idea of a federal government in favor of a national government? Did you find that?
Well, yeah. I actually my research I got into what they call the Virginia Plan, and I think it was called the Virginia Plan because the guy Randolph was from Virginia, I believe, wasn't he?
I think so. Yes.
James Madison. And when they first, Madison kept seconding the motions that were made. Mm-hmm. This guy Charles Pinckney and Randolph were making these motions, and Madison would be the one that would second them. And when they first opened the convention, there was only like eight of the 13 states there, or colonies, as they were at the time. Actually, under the Articles of Federation, I guess they were states. But
they were
when they first
states.
Started out, yes, they started out with a proposal call for a national executive and a national judiciary. And when they took that vote, it was actually passed. So at the beginning of this thing, there was already a push toward a national government instead of a federal government. And then when others came in and argued, it got overturned. But originally, they actually voted before everybody got there that it would be more of a national government. And thank God they changed that. And then as things went on, obviously that got further and further away from the national government and was very clear that it was a federal government with very limited powers and keeping the principal powers to the states. And I think we need to, this is a point we need to bring out on an ongoing basis, particularly you keep talking about us taking back our power, that we have the ability to do that. But the longer we wait and the longer we go without exercising our power, the further we get from the possibility of even being able to do that. And I've started out with this belief, but my belief has gotten a lot stronger, that we have got to take control of our states and demand that our states protect its citizens. We started out, you know, there's this term, the American people. You know, the ones that are really wanting a national government love to use the word the American people. These are the same people that want to get rid of the college. I'm sorry, what's the term for the college? I have a mental block. When you vote in a president, it's electoral college. Thank you, Janet. I came out of my brain before you put it in chat. But Janet put me a note here. It says electoral. it's the same people that would like to get rid of the Electoral College, because the Electoral College retains the rights for each state to make to exercise their sovereignty. Where if we got rid of that, we went more to a democracy where individual rights are thrown out in lieu of majority rule or mob rule. It's the same people that want to talk about the American people. Well, we're really not, from a perspective of sovereignty. We're not American people. We're the people of our state. And each state has its sovereignty, and it's the state's job to exercise those rights and to protect its people. Otherwise, the power goes to that central national government. So we need to be aware of who we are and how people are trying to represent us. And I believe, I've come to really believe, Red, that we, if we don't take control of our state, we have no hope of getting control back from a national de facto government back to a federal government that's living within the strengths of the Constitution. I'll shut up and let you comment on that, because I know you've got...
You see, this is why I, here in the past few weeks, I've mentioned the hot buttons that we need to watch for these things that these problems that are created for people by this authoritarian type of government that we have at this time. And this is why the Canadian wolves that were imported into Montana, Idaho, and Wyoming, Yellowstone Park, those wolves were brought in, and we had a lot of so-called educated people who were saying that, oh, our environment, our natural things are out of balance because we don't have wolves in our system, and nature had put wolves here originally. And of course, their arguments and such are absolutely phony, and they're as phony as can be, because, you know, we've got the history of what it was like out here with when Lewis and Clark made their tour across the country. They wintered here just a few miles in 1806, I guess it was. They wintered just a few miles from where I am right now. And there's no mention of how that we needed more or less wolves and all of that. Now, what these environmentalists do not take into consideration is that everything has changed. That was wide open spaces, no fences. We had millions of buffalo, and it was buffalo was the major animal out there, you know, massive herds of buffalo. And the buffalo were able to take care of themselves pretty well, and the wolves, sure, there were some wolves, but they weren't the big Canadian wolves like what the educated idiots brought in from Canada. The Fish and Wildlife Service had one of their biologists that explained why they couldn't bring in, they should not bring in those wolves. If they had gone to Minnesota and gotten some of those wolves in northern Minnesota, they figure there's about 3,000 of those wolves there. Now, those would have been more like the kind of wolves we needed in Montana. The Canadian wolves are a big, big, big wolf, and because they live off of the moose and such, the caribou, and of course right now the state of Alaska is involved in a lawsuit with the federal government. And so they've got a hot button up there in Alaska, too. Now, I'm kind of getting rambling just a little bit here, but there's method in my madness. You see, when I talk about we taking our power back, this hot button we've got, for decades, many decades, the Fish and Wildlife Service and the Montana Fish and Game Department, they worked together, and they worked to get the elk and the deer and the moose becoming more, you know, more plentiful, and all of that. They regulated the seasons, and we the people gave them that authority to do that. We did not give them the authority to bring in the Canadian wolves to destroy everything that they had worked for close to 100 years, to bring in, you know, to build up the elk herds and such, and it made, it was a great big factor in the economy in Montana, especially in western Montana, because people came in there from all over the world for the great hunting that they had, and it was great for the businesses of restaurants and motels and the outfitters and all of that. And so they brought in those wolves, and they're just decimating. They're just killing off the elk. They've got almost all the moose already, and the deer, and the Fish and Game noticed the hunters in western Montana that within a year or so there would be no big game hunting in Montana, in western Montana. Now, this is an atrocity that has been perpetrated. It is just absolutely destroying the economy in western Montana, and it's a hot button because these people are angry. They worked with the Fish and Game Department for all those years to build up those herds, and it isn't just the wolves, it's the mountain lion. In my younger days, I had hounds in Montana, and we hunted mountain lion, and we got a bounty. We got $50 a piece bounty on them to maintain a control of them. We didn't have to have a license or anything else, and we didn't go out and try to wipe them out. That wasn't our goal at all. And now the Fish and Game, the people got greedy, and they now they sell these licenses, and they divide the state up into territories, and they in each territory they can take so many females and so many males, and now the mountain lion are as bad as the wolves for decimating the elk and the deer. And they're just all over. They're in the cities. In Billings, Montana, where we lived for 40 years, the last 10 years we were there, why people had to watch out because those mountain lion were coming right into town because the deer were coming into town because they felt more safe. And so, you see, these educated people, they didn't stay up with what was really happening. They didn't stay informed as to what was happening and the mood of the people. They didn't check with the people as to what was happening, and they just went their merry way, and now they have literally destroyed the economy in western Montana. And it's a hot button, and so what we're planning, and I hope that the people in Montana, I think they're going along with us, we want to run these ads, full-page ads, in the five major daily papers in Montana. And these ads are going to be educational. They're going to, the people are mad, and they're going to read these. They wouldn't have ordinarily read those if you'd have put this in there before. But now they're angry, and they're looking for answers. They're looking for solutions. And so we're going to have these ads, and they're going to teach about the fully informed jury. the state Republican convention in their platform, which they had here in the last week or so at the state convention. They're talking about promoting the fully informed juries in Montana in the Republican Party. This is what's happening when you get these hot buttons, and if you put that education out there, there were people at the state convention that have been exposed to what we're saying about we, the people, are going to take our power back. Where did the Fish and Game Department get the power to set the seasons on elk and deer? They got it from us. Now, they have violated our trust. Now we have every right in the world to take it back. And if it goes the way I think it's going to go, we're going to open the season on the wolves. They had a little short season last fall, and I think they killed a couple hundred wolves, but that was just a drop in the bucket. That was nothing, because there's thousands of them in there. But they got this big fee from they sold these tags, thousands of these tags, for like $15 a piece, and there was only a couple hundred of them, but they had thousands of those $15 tags that they sold. This is income to the Fish and Wildlife Service, or to the Montana Fish and Game, I should say. And so, you see, we're going to take that power back, and we want to get rid of the wolves. And we're going to get rid of the wolves, and we're not going to have, people aren't going to have a license. They're not going to have a tag or anything else. And if the Fish and Wildlife, the Federals, and the Montana Fish and Game people, the Montana State people, if they try to prosecute any of us for doing what we're going to do, we're going to see to it that they can't get a jury that'll convict anybody. There's the key. I've said all of this. I did ramble, I'll have to admit. But I've said all of this. We're going to challenge the Fish and Wildlife Service, the federal Fish and Game, federal Fish and Wildlife agents out there that might try to arrest somebody. We're going to challenge them. You arrest somebody, and we'll see to it that you don't have any authority to put a fine on them, a penalty, or anything else. And because those full-page ads in the newspapers, we're going to tell people, cut this ad out and keep it on where you can read it on a regular basis. And because we're telling you how that they deprived us of this education about juries and grand juries, we were deprived of that in the government schools. They didn't want us to know. We can put a lot of information on one page, full-page ad in those standard-sized newspapers. And, you see, that's what I'm talking about when I talk about the hot buttons. We've got them. We have the same hot button in Wyoming and in Idaho. And if those three states organize, and I'm fairly confident it's going to happen, I have talked to people in Wyoming and some in Idaho both, and they really like the idea of what I'm saying. Idaho is really, wolves have just decimated the elk herds terrible. Let's hope it works. And of course, in Arizona, they've got a hot button with that illegal immigrant problem. Texas, New Mexico, all those border places, California. I hope those people, or some of those people in California, pick up on this with the illegal immigrants. And you know, the oil thing down there in the Gulf. There could sure be some hot buttons there that would work very well to educate people. I'll shut up now. I've said enough.
Well, I want to challenge any of our listeners to come up with ideas like this in their local areas. to come up with ways of teaching about constitutional principles, and especially ways of restoring our fully informed juries. You know, we've had a lot of losses of people who have resisted paying taxes, who have been criminalized and convicted by a jury of their peers because they did not realize that they had the ability to judge the law. And that's really what you're talking about, is us taking our power back by recognizing that we have the ability as a juror, whether it's a grand juror or a panelist for a grand jury or a petit jury, we have the ability not to just judge the facts of the case, but judge the law. And if the law is unconstitutional, like our income tax is, then we should be acquitting people regardless of what the facts of the case are. And that's going to be the case with the wolves. It should be the case if in similar situations for illegal immigration enforcement. we have
child
on with
services
us,
thing. That child
yes,
services.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
That's a perfect example of it.
Yeah.
We have on with us, I believe, Jim Borland, our friend Jim Borland from American Leadership Network. Jim, are
yes.
you there?
Oh, yes. Oh.
Hi. So, Red, there's a method to your madness. Is that right?
I like to put it that way.
I've never heard it expressed like that. That's pretty good. I'll have to remember that. You know, all right, if the income tax, if that is bogus, well, it seems like the feds are in double jeopardy because the currency is bogus too. So it seems like the whole thing is just moot if you don't have any legal money to begin with, how can you be held liable for anything?
They're operating strictly using the uninformed, the misinformed, miseducated American as their source of power. And this is why we have to use any kind of a hot button we can come up with to put this education out there. And I think that the full-page ads in the newspapers are probably the best thing that we've got at the moment. Other than, you know, we need some people that will get this stuff out on the Internet so that it's out there, coming at people from every angle.
Now, I got in on this call a little late, so where is this jury concept, or I know it's not a concept, it's constitutional, part of the Constitution, but where is it in the country getting any traction?
In Montana, we had a lot of traction back in the early 80s and the late 70s. The IRS lost 4 out of 5 cases that they prosecuted in federal court in Montana in 1980. There was at least 4 years out of the decade of the 80s where they were unable to get a grand jury indictment of anybody for tax evasion. The problem was I wasn't there producing the television specials and everything, and, of course, they priced us out. The television stations, well, I bought a one-hour TV special. I paid to I can't remember the proper term for it right now. I ran on a 1 hour TV special in early in the spring of 79. I preempted, that was the word I was looking for, I preempted one of the major television shows like Gunsmoke or one of those. I paid extra money to take that time slot, prime time, like from 6 to 7 or 7 to 8 o'clock in the evening. And we always tried to run them on a Monday evening. But you see, the world has changed so much since then. In Montana, you were lucky if you were in an area where you could get two channels. Most of the rural people, they only had one channel usually. And so you had a captive market. By 1983, that was changing, and the one television station in Billings, they just bluntly told me that they would sell me the time, but it would cost me double anybody else, because they had gotten the message from the Internal Revenue Service that if they cooperated with us, we had a couple of organizations, Americans for Constitutional Government, and we had one, Montanans for Constitutional Government, and a couple others, too. We operated under quite a number of names, and because that kept the media wondering who was who, and that's still a good idea. For like the tea parties and such, come up with different names, and it really rattles the cage for the media because they don't know who's who and who's to blame for certain things that are happening. But those television specials really did a job. But now you've got how many channels that are available if they're on cable, anywhere from 25 to 200, I guess, or better. And so the market is so watered down. Now, the DVDs are a better investment today. We, of course, put out an awful lot of VHS back there in the 80s, a lot of them. But they were expensive compared to the DVDs. But we have to utilize whatever is available to get this education out there. And we've got people in this country, we may not be aware of their own personal hot buttons, but there's a lot of people out there that are very upset right today. And we might not, know exactly what it is, that's got under their collar so bad. Probably it's zoning or something like that, planning. My goodness, what they've done to us out here in Washington State has been atrocious. My septic system here for a new house was $22,000. And we've got a pretty good size acreage, and we sure didn't, we're not limited in our space for a septic system. But it's all, it's the kind of things that tick people off, and we have got to get ourselves in a position where we can move in, where people have become so upset and disgruntled with what's going on. Of course, the unemployment, my goodness, we've got millions of people that are unemployed. Now, I'll tell you, those people are available for education, re-education.
Red, I put in septic systems, and we do it for well under $3,000. Now, how in the heck does it cost
$22,000? The state of Washington, we used to call it the Soviet state of Washington. Senator Henry Scoop Jackson had quite an influence on this state, and we've had our share of the tree huggers and all the rest. And, of course, I would prefer to be back in Montana, but I am. You see, when you're young and your family is growing up, you're the boss, you're the man of the house. But when you get into your second childhood, then your children become the boss. And so that's my that's my problem right now. But septic systems here are just absolute insanity. Two monster big tanks, 1,250-gallon concrete tanks, one with a pump, and it pumps it into one from one tank to the other, and then it goes into a sand filter, and that's got a pump. There's two pumps. The system is pressurized. And we didn't know it needed any pressurized because we've got plenty of downslope. It's just they've got you so, well, for this manufactured home that we put in, the permits is over $11,000. 1,500 or 1,600 square feet. We're a couple of old people that we don't need much space anymore. But these are hot buttons that we need to be ready to capitalize on.
Let's
Jim. Jim.
Yeah. Go ahead.
I know that you've been making an effort to at least establish a strategy, if not actually already introduce the Ensign of the Nation, your book, and the strategy within it, to the Tea Parties. Are you having any success in getting that door open?
Well, little by little, I spoke with a lady today with, is it Mass Resistance? ResistNet. That's right, ResistNet. And let's see, the other day we spoke with Ray Moore, who was on our conference call, and Dale Robertson was also on there. I had spoken with Dale before about it. It's just a matter of getting people acquainted to the fact that there is something potentially out there that communicates basically who we are in an ideological way and from a constitutional frame of reference. You know, you can get all kind of emails that are pointing out the problems, and they seem to be coming in like a flood. But there's very little out there in the way of anything that's really positive and that's unifying and that specifically describes what it is that we stand for in a succinct way. And in all the time that I've been involved doing this, I haven't met one person that took issue with it. And if anything, most everyone has been affirmative of it. So it's just a matter of getting it out there before enough people and getting them acquainted with some precepts that have really been there all along. It's just kind of like, you know, like Red was talking about, we've been dumbed down, and you know, if you're not taught something, that you just don't get it through osmosis. Somebody has to convey it to you and teach it to you and transmit it to you somewhere along the way. And if that doesn't happen, then, you know, the foundations literally get destroyed through our illiteracy. And that's basically what's happened to us. But the conference
I'd like to discuss this a little bit further after break, if we can. We're up against a break. If it's okay, I'd like for you to stick with us, Jim. It'll only take a couple of minutes. We'll take a quick break here and grab something to drink, and we'll be back with you shortly. Thank you. This is Walls in Our Minds.
For a drink from some feeding on the husks around me till my strength was almost gone. Long my soul.
Hi, this is Mama Cooks. I'm hoping that Terry will unmute. He's probably talking a mile a minute.
Yeah. That's some dead
air. I sent him a message, but
you know me. You know me. You know me too well. You don't. You just know me too well. That's all. Welcome back to Walls in Our Minds. I'm here with my guest, our guest, Jim Borland, my co-host Red Beckman. Jim, you were talking about, we were really talking about ways of taking our power back. And, of course, you being the author of the book, Ensign of the Nation, bringing out those foundational concepts of that are found in the preamble. We're talking about ways of getting people. I wanted to get to the point of how do we get people to take action? How do we get them to respond to what you're teaching? How do you get them to respond to what Red's teaching? My experience, and I've talked to you about this before, is that only 1 out of 10 people are going to actually make a positive change in their life when they hear a truth. And it really takes being in a context of a relationship before most people will make a positive change. So how do we, you know, get into the tea parties when you got, you know, literally all these millions of people, but and I do see in these Tea Party groups, in these local groups, I see that the people that are working those groups do get into relationship with one another. They They have a local meeting. They get face to face. They get to know each other. They have refreshments. They talk about other things together. And as a result of that, there's this natural accountability that they find. And when somebody comes up with an idea or brings out a truth, that natural accountability through the relationships ends up actually acting out in their lives. They actually make a change. They actually do something to accomplish something good. And we've gotten away from that in this country. We've sat behind our in front of our television sets with our remote controls. We've stopped getting in relationship. We've stopped being active through our churches as much. It's all about me. And we've got to break through that, because what you're talking about, Jim, I don't think Red would debate a piece of it. You said you haven't come across anybody that has objected to it to your face. But how do you get them to actually take it and implement it in their lives? I think that we've got some great ideas. We can put some of these ideas together, just like with Walt Myers. He's got great ideas. And there's a lot of other people out there that have got great ideas. But getting it implemented in people's lives seems to take that relationship. What are you doing in that way?
Well, just making contacts with in the Tea Parties, people are in various patriot organizations, and trying to introduce it to them. We've got a real unique phenomena that seems to be going on. And I guess it's really always been this way. Edmund Burke made this statement. I think I mentioned this in our call the other day, but when evil men combine, the good must associate, else they will fall one by one. And it's been my experience that many people are very particular about who they choose to associate. And at this juncture, I don't think we have the luxury of being able to choose and be so discriminating about who we associate with. Especially those that are in the patriot movement. In our community, we have a tea party. We haven't met in over 2 months. We haven't had a general meeting. And so people who are prospective to be interested in the tea party, I can't even tell them when our next meeting will be. We're not having anything to commemorate the 4th. I'm going to be going to Tupelo, which is about 60 miles from where I live, up there where the American Families Association is. But the picture and the lay of the land is totally different up there. They have a spirit of unity. They have good leadership. And they're, on the 3rd, they're putting together a 4th of July celebration, which we are invited to come to. But we're not doing anything, and I talked with a Tea Party lady down in Jackson, and they're not doing anything down there. If ever the words of the Declaration were ever relative to a people in a time, it's been no more so than ours right now. And we should be immersed in the preamble of the Declaration right now and liking those words to ourselves and to our particular circumstances. And for supposedly patriots not to be trying to recapture that spirit of 76, I'm just kind of left scratching my head. If you ever were going to look for a moment to celebrate this nation and what it was about in its founding, the 4th is the time to do it. And not to do it basically indicates to me a lack of individuals who desire to associate with one another. I can't explain how it would be explained any other way. But you literally, you have that phenomenon. Certain people are just particular about who they choose to associate, and maybe it's a combination of just a lack of vision. But I try to, you know, network and find people just like yourselves, and it comes on for you or it doesn't. And that's, you know, either some people see this or some people, it doesn't matter. If you bore a hole in the top of their head and pour it in, it still runs out their ears. So, you know, a lot of this I can't explain and give an answer to, and when some of it just doesn't make any sense. But just like Red was saying the other day, you know, we're in a spiritual battle. And we know that the land can be misbehave as a nation and as a people, that cursings can be placed upon the land. And I literally believe that's where we are.
Well, can I throw some concepts at you and just see where if any of it sticks?
Sure.
Men have a philosophy. It's more subconscious than conscious, but it is conscious also, that distance equals safety. Women, on the other hand, see closeness as safety. You watch women sit down in a row of seats, and more often than not, those women will sit next to each other, and the men will put a chair between them. So it's kind of a natural phenomena that men seek their isolation. As a result of this, and a lot of other things too, but in our churches, our women have basically taken control of our churches. They may not necessarily sit on the church council. They may not necessarily be an elder. You know, a lot of churches don't even allow that. But even the churches that don't allow it, even those churches that won't allow a woman to teach a Bible class where there are men, in those churches, they've been taken over significantly by the women, in that the church activities and environment is primarily dictated in the context of feminine preference. So most men are out of their element in a church. Guys are more comfortable in a stadium or an arena where they can cheer or they can, you know. I heard somebody talk about one time, what is worship? And they said, is, you know, standing up and cheering in a football stadium, is that worship? Well, if you really look at it, everything we do in our life, everything we do, really equates back to our worship. How we live our lives and what we do in our lives really shows what's important to us, and thereby is some form of worship. Well, you don't see that kind of thing going on much in churches, not the masculine context. We need to talk about this a little bit. We need to get the word out that distance is not safety, particularly when it comes to taking control of your state. or understanding what you need to do to protect your rights, that distance actually puts us in a vulnerable position. I mean, you wouldn't try to go fight a war by yourself, but that's precisely what we're trying to do, and nobody's really talking about that. So I guess we need to be honest about this. We need to say, hey, look, I'm not comfortable as a man being within a certain space of another guy, and I am probably more choosy about who I associate with than my wife might be in some environments. So the other side of that is, it's been proven that if a church gets a woman to attend, there's a possibility that her husband will come and visit sometime. There's a possibility that her kids will come. But if you get a man to come to church, it's like 95% that the whole family will show up at church if the man's there. So we've got the same kind of problem going on here. We've got guys in isolation. And if we want the whole family, including the kids, to be mentored properly, we've got to get the men in this game. Do you disagree with that?
Oh, I totally agree. I just don't know what it will take sometime to compel men to act in their best interest and, to do as Edmund Burke says, the good must associate. And it seems like it has been a phenomenon, I guess, forever. But it's really a problem with block in my particular town and community. And some communities, for whatever reason, they just seem to have a lot better spirit of unity and maybe be fortunate to have good leadership at the same time.
Let me throw a different term out at you. And I'm trying to brainstorm with you because I want to see you and I want to see American Leadership Network successful. I want to see the Ensign to the Nation catch fire. I want to see people implemented in their lives the same as you do. And I'm convinced that just telling them about it or giving them a book to read isn't going to do it. Another thing that they found, men are not as good at multitaskers as women are. Men have a tendency to compartmentalize their brains where women kind of intermingle things. And you can give a woman three or four concepts, but you can only give man about two before you lose them. So I'm going to suggest that you take a few lessons from Red Beckman. Red, I remember when he was talking about his book, Why the Militia, compared to Dr. Edwin Vieira, who's got 4 degrees from Harvard, who wrote Constitutional Homeland Security, which is basically a book about the militia. Red said that his book was better, and the reason it was better was because it didn't take 4 Harvard Law degrees to understand it. Red's message is very simple. If you watch a seminar, he keeps his points to a minimum, and he keeps his language at a level that Joe Sixpack gets it. So if my urging to you is that if we can create an environment that's conducive to men feeling like they're in their context, and we can keep the points to a minimum, just 1 or 2 points, and help them focus on it. Now, let me throw something else at you. You use the term sense of unity. I think of that as sense of community. And I believe that I can get a guy to feel guilty about his sense of community more than I can his sense of unity. So my point is that we need to use emotional word pictures that appeal to men and telling them, look, we need for you to have a sense of community. We need for you to help build your community. You know, it starts with your family, but it goes outside of that family. You've got to get outside of that and get them to understand that that sense of community is what's going to save their rights and the future rights of their grandchildren. If we can get just that point across, maybe we can get them off the couch. Maybe we can get them to divert away from their bowling league or, you know, their golf game or whatever it is that is so important in their life that they're willing to spend a lot of time doing it and not a lot of time doing anything to protect their rights or their community. I threw those ideas out at you. I'm looking for criticism to come back. I'm looking for feedback.
What comes to my mind at the moment is the statement that Lincoln used, I guess it was in the Gettysburg Address, when he said that we are intoxicated with unbroken success. And I feel like too many people are just kind of intoxicated in their carnal security. And for some
reason, you've been listening. I know Red's got something to say. He's being awful quiet.
Yeah, I just was thinking about, you remember Mona Doctor from the people at Hamilton, Montana, and how they put that thing together there, and they're celebrating conservatism. That's the name of their organization. There was three of them. They were all three, you might say, upper echelon in the Republican Party. They resigned their positions. And when the three of them got together in December of 08, they decided they should have a meeting in January. And so they passed the word around, and they said, we're going to have a potluck. 55 people showed up. And it was a total shock to them. They just didn't anticipate that. And so they discussed it amongst themselves and decided that they should have a meeting every month. They would organize and have a meeting every month. And of course, all three of them were still in the hierarchy of the Republican Party. And by May and June of 09, they were having 4, 5, up to 600 people once a month, and they didn't give up on their potlucks. When I was there the 15th of September of 09, here's this big crowd of people, and they've got a potluck, and they're still having their potlucks. And she made the comment, she said, you got to feed the man. Now, I'm just throwing that out there for you to think about it. Jim says their tea parties have done nothing, and so I would recommend that he talk to some of the people, get on the phone with them and say, hey, this is what happened in Hamilton, Montana, and we need something like this to happen right here in our community. And if it's a potluck, it's going to take a potluck to do it. Let's get with it and see what happens. And, of course, one of the things that characterized that situation, there wasn't any of them that were really up to speed in any way, shape, or form, hardly, with the key issues that people are talking about in the Patriot movement. And so that was not a disadvantage they were sticking with very basic principles when they started out. And, of course, they brought in speakers, and I went to recommend some of the speakers they had, but it worked out for them. And it's continuing to work for them. And they're jumping on this hot button I was telling you about. And so it's just another idea about, you know, having the fellowship of a potluck is not all that bad. You're going to get some conversation going. But you're going to have to have people that are very concerned about what is happening to our country, to our government at the state level, the federal level, the county level, the city level. There's people out there that are very concerned about what's going on. You've got to find them. You've got to reach out to them and let them know that you're available for, you know, to try to help them with their problem. We've got such a problem with our churches, of course. I keep thinking about 2 Thessalonians in the Bible, in the New Testament, 2 Thessalonians 2, the second chapter, and the Apostle Paul is being asked, when is Christ coming back? When is our King, our Messiah King, coming back? And he said, there will be a falling away first. Well, we've had the falling away. It's there right now because in these churches, and I know a lot of these preachers that are doing it, and they're telling the people, oh, we have been blessed. We are so blessed in this country. Wait a minute. You better take a look. Is this big multi-trillion dollar debt a blessing? Is this war, undeclared war in Afghanistan, is it a blessing? 47 of our young soldiers have died this month already in Afghanistan. Is that a blessing? Is our divorce rate in this country, is it a blessing? Is it a blessing that we have something like 50 million abortions or more? My Bible tells me that the blood of those innocents is crying out to our Creator. And so we've got these churches that are causing a lot of problems because they're teaching theological error from the pulpits. And they're telling them, oh, we're so blessed. We help Israel. We bless Israel. That's not what, you know, they say we're blessing the Jew. Well, that's not the way the Bible says. It's Israel that we have to bless. And so anyway, we've got these problems, and they're not going to be solved overnight. But I will say this: we have a lot more going for us today than we had 6 months ago. We've got more going for us today than what we had a year ago, because we have more people getting involved on a daily basis. Tomorrow at 11 o'clock, I'm going to have a fellow out here. He's a denominational pastor, a preacher. He's a very influential kind of a guy, and he read my little book, he read that one too, but he read the book Church Deceived. And in that book, of course, I talk about how our churches have been deceived, and it cut him right to the heart, apparently, because he called and said, I'm coming. I want to have some time with you. I've got questions. And so, you see, this was not happening 5 years ago or 10 years ago. It's happening now. And these people are, when they come to the point where they recognize that our government has become so evil, and you just can't kid a lot of these people any longer. It just isn't going to work. And then there's one thing I've been wanting to mention here, too, and now I'm going to shut up. I don't remember who it was that made the comment or the remark first. It has been repeated in other ways, in other places. What the government fears, what the conspirators that are trying to put us into a new world order, the thing that they fear the most, and they have said this, they are afraid of the leaderless resistance. Now, have either of you heard that one before? Leaderless resistance. And you think about that. That's, you see, the individual out there that is an introvert, perhaps, but he gets himself informed. My friend in Helena, Montana, may be of that nature. He isn't out an out front kind of a guy that much, but he's getting himself informed. He's becoming a super intelligent. Of course, he's an educated man to start with, but he is getting information, and I can rely on him. I can ask him to look up things for me and check things out, and he does. Leaderless resistance. This is the thing that the CIA, they try to get their informants into our groups, into our meetings, to tape what we say, and they hope that they get the chance to use it against us. Well, we don't, there's been an effort, to, of course, to subvert and infiltrate the Tea Parties, and there's been a certain amount of effectiveness there. I hope that isn't what happened to Jim and his Tea Party area and where he's at. But leaderless resistance scares them to death. If they have the leaders that they, I mean, if they know of people that are leaders and such, then they can keep track of them. Those that are not very obvious, those that aren't out there sticking out like a sore thumb, like myself. They don't worry. They keep track of me, and they'll be keeping track of Terry the same way, and Jim, you too. But we've got to nurture, cultivate the leadership out there that can work very subtly and very carefully, on a one-on-one basis with people. That's very effective if you've got somebody that's really well-informed. So I'll quit with that. Have we got some dead air again?
No, I thought Jim would like to comment back to you on that.
Well, it's hard to chalk it up to what exactly causes people to respond and causes them not to respond. We can speculate. But I just have to go back to what I've said before, that I honestly believe that judgments are on the land, and that cursings are upon us that we don't even seem to be able to reckon with just common sensible things that are in our mutual interest. We're divided and we debate over things that used to just be commonly understood, things like marriage was between a man and a woman. That wasn't even open for discussion or debate. Our borders being overrun, I think most people had a common understanding that, you're not a sovereign nation if you have porous borders. And now those things seem to be, the border situation seems to be treated lightly as a back burner issue. Thank goodness to Arizona, They've moved it up.
Jim?
Yes.
Jim? When your Tea Parties met, what was the context like? What was the environment like? What was the appeal to be there? I know you had a passion to be there, but for those guys that don't have your passion to be there, what was the attraction? What was to get their focus? What got their attention? What would make them want to come back?
Well, they've been centered around the congressional campaign that's been going on. And it seems like that our Tea Party cannot meet together without having to invite some speaker to come and speak. Now, that's fine. I mean, we can have speakers, but the one thing that kind of irked me is that they'd have speakers that would drive 150 miles one way, and the executive committee would not see to it that they were given some compensation for their travel expenses. I just don't think you do that. I don't think you ask people to drive 5 hours and then spend 2 hours with you and don't give them any kind of compensation for travel. But it seems like our particular Tea Party has to have somebody there to come speak, and it's like we can't sit together and have a round table of doing some critical thinking of our own on issues that are of concern or interest in our own community or in our state. And I don't know. I can't figure it out. I'm not sure.
You don't have any hot buttons.
Well, their hot button is to try to get this Democrat unseated in our congressional district, which is fine. But there are more things than just that we could be. I mean, there's just a flood of issues that seem to be coming up on a daily basis that we could have a stack of issues that we could discuss at any given meeting. But if you don't have a structured and scheduled meeting for people to come to, then how am I as a member going to tell a prospective interested party, when are we going to meet?
I think the structure and stuff is all good, as long as you mix it up once they're there. For example, Red mentioned them having a potluck. Maybe that's a good idea. Maybe it's something you could try.
Yeah.
But when you get the people together, you've got to figure out some way to get them in relationship. For example, divide them into work groups and give them something to work on and give those groups something to come back and report about, like ideas on how to accomplish a particular task. Let's say you wanted to get ideas about how to get this particular candidate gone or how to attack him. If you got 20 people, divide them into 5 groups. Designate somebody as a facilitator for each one of those groups and let each person have an opportunity to speak at that table. Instruct them in that way. And then let them discuss that for a short time and then come back and give a report on what each table's ideas were and put them on a board and kind of begin to develop the relationships amongst those people. Get them talking to each other. Let them know that they've got a voice in the process and that you consider them important. Number 3 on a list of successful salespeople or marketing people is being listened to. Number 1 is being challenged. Number 2 is satisfaction of workplace, which really relates to a proactive environment and people not being reactive, disrupting the production of the team. So the good instruction in having a facilitator helps give them that good work environment. Giving them something to specifically think about and to come back with as an idea is challenging them. It's really number one on what will get them to either stay in the group or come back to the group. So those three things are critical, and what I just gave you the solution to all three of them. Just one idea. Now, you can come up with your own ideas on how to do the same thing, but number one, challenge them. Number two, give them a proactive work environment. And number three, make sure they know they're being heard, because being listened to is important to them. They'll come back because of it. So those three things, were those three things being accomplished in the context of a relationship in that meeting? If it is, then you got a good shot at building a coalition and bringing them back to the table.
I think in our particular instance, we're suffering from leadership. We've got a guy that got the thing going, but he's not really, you know, everybody is not a leader. And I think you do, it's important to identify someone who has good leadership skills in keeping a group together. And I think that's probably one of our biggest impediments, is the guy who is acting as our chairman. He is just not an effective leader. And he told me, and I sent him an email about the fact that I was concerned and that others had expressed concern also, that we haven't had a meeting in 2 months and we can't even tell people when we're going to have one. And he responded, well, I don't really plan on getting anything going until about September toward the general election. And he sent that not only to me, he copied everybody else that I had sent this out to, which I'm glad that he did, because it kind of gives everybody, you know, the scoop that you know, our chairman doesn't plan on having any meetings until September, thereabout. And which that's basically just clued everybody in, if they weren't already, that you can't grow an organization if you don't meet.
May I jump in here a little bit?
Go ahead.
Jim, did Terry send you a copy of the little book, Walls in Our Minds?
I've got it, yes. Jim Cavan has sent it to me.
Have you read it?
I'm about halfway through it.
Most people sit down and they read it in about one sitting.
Yeah.
It's not that long. But here's I don't know how many people you've got on your email list for your local tea party. How many names do you suppose your leader has got on his email?
I think he's got several hundreds.
Well, okay. I think you should prepare an email and explain the three votes of the people. You see, if they don't, if your leader, he hasn't got a handle on that. He doesn't recognize that this fall election is about as unimportant as anything you can get at this stage of the game in this country. Putting the emphasis on getting somebody elected to Congress is not the solution to our nation's problems. And so I think that somebody needs to prepare an email message. Say, wait a minute here. I just found out that we've been hoping and praying that we would get a better government by electing better people to Congress. And I just found out that that's not the way to do it. and proceed to tell them about the three votes of the people and how that the Internal Revenue Service is a domestic terrorist organization. You get people's attention when you start talking like that, because there will be, out of those several hundred people, there will be people out there that have suffered through audits, all kinds of things with the Internal Revenue Service. And so with that many names on the list, you've got a tremendous opportunity, to communicate with all those hundreds of people. And tell them, say, wow, I didn't know this. Don't lord it over them. Just say, wait a minute, I thought I knew how this system works, but I found out that I don't. Make a confession out of it, and tell them about the three votes of the people. And there's other things in that little booklet, like the section there on the difference between true patriots and false patriots, the difference between a statesman and a politician. These things should be put on that email list, and hopefully people will read it.
Well, like I said before, Red, you know, if people in this patriot movement are not given to take advantage of commemorating the 4th, I'm not sure what it's going to take to move them.
I wouldn't put that much emphasis on that. You see, it's patriotism is something that's supposed to be at work 365 days a year, and so my goodness, with that email address, I'd get with that leader. I'd have you better get a couple more, get hold of Jim Cabinus and tell him you want a couple more copies of that book, Walls in Our Minds, and get with that leader and have him read that book. And once he reads it, why, you sit down and help him make up these emails that he can send out as the leader of the Tea Parties. He should be sending one of these out every week. This idea of waiting till September.
Can I throw something in here?
Yes.
Where are the people on the 4th of July? See, you're wanting the people to come basically for a specific function for the 4th of July, and most people on 4th of July are really focused on family or some entertaining event. The question is, how do you get exposure to one of those events? How do you get invited to an event where you can make one or two brief points and get a message out there? How can you get the Ensign of the Nation out there? How can you get Walls in Our Minds out there? How can you find something that you can do where people are that you can get a voice into to make a point to reach somebody? To me, that's the way I would look at the 4th of July. I wouldn't try to bring a man away from his family. I'd go to where his family is and figure out how to get a message out. Even if it's handing out something and getting a few people to go and hand out something at a fireworks display, you know, I don't care. But the point is that is a day when people are in an environment that they are comfortable in. Pulling them out of it is probably unrealistic. But finding a way to get a message to them on that day is not unrealistic.
Well, you know, to some people, the 4th of July is about fireworks. To me, it's about everything that the Declaration of Independence encapsulates, and especially those precepts that are applicable to us right now. If men do not connect with those precepts, especially at this juncture now. I'm just not sure what it is, maybe other than a potluck, what's going to connect with a man.
Jim, my dad's gone, so it's not going to do any good to complain about him, but he wouldn't even go to a fireworks display unless he put one on in his parking lot of his store to attract attention, because he was working on the 4th of July, just like he was working on practically every other holiday. And my mother, God love her, she was one of the best women I've ever known in my life. I mean, I was really blessed. I had a mother that was just an incredible person. She taught me to think independently. She always had a hot meal on the table. We could always bring a friend home with us without even announcing it because there was going to be extra food on the table. We had a large family. She facilitated that whole family. She was a disciplinarian. She taught us about God and gave us a work ethic and all of those things. And my dad participated in some of that, but not to the extent that she did. But God love her, she never taught me about the Constitution. She didn't pass that on. It wasn't something that was a big thing. What was big was family, integrity, honesty, being clean, treating people right, getting outside yourself. She wouldn't tolerate somebody being inside themselves. Those are all wonderful values, but guess what? I didn't grow up thinking about the Constitution on the 4th of July. I knew it was Independence Day. It gave me pride in country. But that's just not where people's heads are, and we've got to figure that out. Now I've developed a passion for this. That's why I'm on this Blog Talk show. This is why I reached out and found a guy like Red Beckman to help mentor me into being in a place in my mind that would break down the walls. But I'm a marketing guy. I am a leader. I don't mind saying straight up. I prefer being in a leadership position, and I've done a good job of it when I've been put in that position. But I recognize where people are and what you got to do to get to them, and how to get them back, how to get their mind in the game. And that's what we got to think about. We can't sit back and say, well, they should be thinking about the Constitution or the Declaration of Independence on 4th of July. Yeah, you're right. We should all be thinking about it, just like we should be thinking about the birth, death, and resurrection of Jesus on Christmas, or really every Sunday. But even people who go to church don't do that. I mean, how many churches even have a regular communion, for God's sake? They dismiss it as being important. And it is important. And so is thinking about independence and our rights and things on the 4th of July. But people aren't there, and we got to reach them where they are.
Well, I think this is sometimes where Christians don't make the connection with Scripture, where it says, when iniquity shall abound, the love of man shall wax cold among many. And iniquity does abound here. And I think men's hearts have waxed cold and indifferent. But that's more the reason for us to recognize that, to be more combative toward abounding iniquity, and especially that's being hammered on our culture, targeted toward our kids. But for some reason, men seem to sometimes be somewhat indifferent about that too. It blows my mind to see how we take things like cartoons and turn them into such vile garbage, knowing full well that kids gravitate to cartoons, and men sit back idle and let that go on, unchallenged. I just can't connect with it. I don't know.
Well, we got to keep trying. We got to keep trying, and we got to work with each other, and we got to take those ideas and make them fly.
We've got to rely on the Lord to help bring friends to our cause. Just like in the War of Independence, there had to be a providential assistance, and we need it now, but we've also got to recognize Second Chronicles. The nation, the people have got to repent. All of us have the sweeping off to do on our doorsteps. And I guess, as always, some more than others, but we are doing some pretty reprehensible things as a nation, and I think that the just judgments are upon us. And it just can't help but be upon us when we're contradicting everything that we say that we're about. In God we trust, one nation under God. We can't even describe or define who he is. And if anything,
we've got about 2 minutes, gentlemen. So if anybody's got a final thought, now's the time to get it out.
I'd like to make a suggestion. Jim, get your Bible and read Deuteronomy, the 28th chapter, from beginning to end. And then sit down and write up you talk about, that the nation is under judgment. Write this up. And you read this, you're very concerned about the future of our nation and all because of that you read that, and you take that to the leader of the Tea Parties, and you try to get him to read Deuteronomy 28, the entire chapter. And then cooperate with him. Tell him you would like to have a message sent out to those hundreds of people that he has the email address for. He's probably got it set up so that just pressing a couple of buttons and everybody will get it. Deuteronomy 28 talks about the blessings and the curses. And have him put it out and have him ask for a response from as many people as possible. You want to know how many read it. That, to me, you've got such a fabulous, rare opportunity. There's several hundred people there in that tea party, and they're without a shepherd almost, you might say. They're waiting for the leader to do something. It's time the leader does something. And it's time for you to lead the leader. And let him keep that leadership position. But you are going to have to, you're going to be responsible for that leader and getting him off center. It can be done. You need to, read that chapter. Ezekiel. It's Deuteronomy, the 28th chapter, the chapter that they talk about the blessings and the curses. And
yeah, I'll read that.
Nobody can read that without recognizing where we are.
There's a man
country going
around taking names.
Gentlemen, it's been a great conversation. We're up against the end of the show. I want to welcome everybody back next week. We will. I've got some really good ideas for some great guests for next week. And Jim Bourne, I'd like for you to consider being around next Thursday night. I'd like to get you involved in a discussion next week also. Next week, everybody, same station, same time. And remember, Wednesday night with Dan Gonzalez and American Politics 101, followed up by Dr. Tate Show. Good night.
Good night.
Night.
Will you partake of that last offered cup or disappear into the potter's ground? when the man comes around. Hear the trumpets, hear the pipers. 100 million angels singing. Multitudes are marching to the big kettle drum. Voices calling, voices crying. Some are born and some are dying. It's Alpha and Omega's kingdom come. And the whirlwind is in the thorn tree. The virgins are all trimming their wicks. The whirlwind is in the thorn tree. It's hard for thee to kick against the pricks. Till Armageddon, no shalom, no shalom. Then the father hen will call his chickens home. The wise men will bow down before the throne. And at his feet, they'll cast their golden crowns. When the man comes around. Whoever is unjust, let him be unjust still. Whoever is righteous, let him be righteous still. Whoever is filthy, let him be filthy still. Listen to the words long written down. When the man comes around. Hear the trumpets, hear the pipers. 100 million angels singing. Multitudes are marching to the big kettle drum. Voices calling, voices crying. Some are born and some are dying. It's Alpha and Omega's kingdom come. And the whirlwind is in the thorn tree. The virgins are all trimming their wicks. The whirlwind is in the thorn tree. It's hard for thee to kick against the pricks. In measured 100 weight and penny pound. When the man comes around. And I heard a voice in the midst of the four beasts. And I looked, and behold, a pale horse. And his name that sat on him was Death. And hell followed with him.